filming me!
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And a couple of months ago, we did an episode on The Long Walk, and so we're proceeding from walking to running. In the intervening time, we covered the new Frankenstein, and we're covering another new adaptation of a previously covered topic. In this case, it is the 2025 Edgar Wright adaptation of The Running Man, and I don't remember when we last covered it, but the book is from when? Do you know?
Well, the book was written in 1973 and published in 1982.
Okay. And then we covered the 1987 movie.
In 2021.
Yes.
Episode 105.
Sweet. So if you want to go back and listen to that, you'll hear all our thoughts about that one. But we're going to talk about the new one. So not really much book discussion other than, you know, talking about how canonical the movie might be.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Or not.
The movie is, and like I said, directed by Edgar Wright, as stars Glenn Powell, stars Josh Brolin's teeth, Coleman Domingo,
Michael Cera,
a bunch of other people. So, yeah.
William H. Macy.
I forgot he was in that. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So, where do you want to start?
So, do you want to go all the way back to the book? Or do you want to? Okay.
No. That's why I said we probably won't talk about the book except as...
We don't really need to talk about the book because this movie is very canonical.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, I'd say it's like 95% canonical or higher.
Right. Okay. They tweaked the ending. That's about it.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's some minor details
that are different. Extended the ending.
It's definitely modernized from the original book.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. So maybe talk a little bit about Edgar Wright. Are you familiar with his filmography at all?
Given that I just tried to call him Gareth Powell three times, no.
Gareth Edwards, you did say the name of an actual director, but that might be in the blooper reel.
Thank you.
I think you've seen Shaun of the Dead.
No.
No?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Have you seen Scott Pilgrim?
No.
Okay. James?
Yeah. That movie's great.
You've seen Baby Driver?
Yeah.
Hot Fuzz? You've seen the Cornetto trilogy?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I have as well. I think I've seen all of the films that he wrote and directed, and then there's some that he didn't write but also directed, and I don't think I've seen everything, but
right.
But I do really enjoy his films.
I even went to the World Ends Pub in London.
Oh, nice. Did you have a pint?
I did.
I had pretty high expectations for this movie because of how much I enjoy Edgar Wright's movies. I like his directorial style. I like the way he edits things. And when we eventually get to talking about Scott Pilgrim, I think it is an absolute masterpiece of editing. And
yeah,
I think the trailer hurt my impression of this movie because I saw the trailer and it gave me the impression that it was going to be a little more Edgar Wright than the movie ended up being.
So as someone that's only seen one other Edgar Wright movie that he knows of, what would I be looking for in an Edgar Wright movie?
A certain kineticism, you know, like, especially something like Hot Fuzz, which I think is just masterfully edited and written because it sets a bunch of jokes up and then pays them all off. So like all the jokes hit twice, at least twice.
Okay.
And it's just absolutely hysterical for that. And so it was very funny. And so I kind of expected this movie to be funnier than it was. Kind of expected it to be a little faster paced than it was. So, but let's talk about you guys. I mean, you guys saw it after I did. Ethan and I went and saw it on opening night.
Yeah.
So, thoughts?
I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
The special effects were okay. It was a little over the top in some places. And I don't know if that's an homage to the original Schwarzenegger movie, which was, you know, quite over the top in many places and, you know, hilariously funny doing it. But, you know, some of the explosions, some of the details they went to, just a bit much. Like the crazy guy who rings the own bell to summon the people into his house. And
right.
They'll all come if you hit the button.
Mm-hmm.
Bang.
Yeah.
I feel like the over-the-topness, though, was part of the book for me. And so having it in the movie was very appropriate.
And
I think I had an opposite effect of what you did from the trailer. Watching the trailer made me realize... this movie was going to be very canonical.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, this is the adaptation we should have had. Mm-hmm. And we got it.
Okay.
So I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was funny.
Okay.
Almost throughout the entire thing.
So I'm kind of hoping you guys will talk me into liking the movie more than I did.
Oh, you didn't like the movie very much?
No, not really. I mean, I had basically a good time, but I was just kind of let down by it. I expected more from it. So,
okay, so when you say more, are you thinking more Schwarzenegger? Are you thinking more Wright? You're thinking more... what were you left wanting?
I think he's thinking more Wright.
More Wright, yeah, yeah. Not more Schwarzenegger. We already have that adaptation, yeah. Right?
And I was glad it was less like Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
Because I didn't listen to the episode from our previous episode, but I'm certain I probably pointed out that I didn't really appreciate the arena aspect of that movie. I like this movie better that it actually took place in the real world.
Yes.
And went out.
Real world?
Or, well.
Yeah.
Well, what our real world is trending towards.
Yeah, right. I don't think you could try and go toe-to-toe with the Arnold movie.
Right.
And come out okay. Right. We've talked about this with the Total Recall movie, right? It hit the same beats. Right, you don't want to do that, or Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, yeah. You don't
tried
need
to hit
do
the right. Wrath of Khan beats, and like you're going to fail based on that because there's other stuff that goes into those beats working,
right.
And you know, because it came out at a specific time, and so I would have hated this the same way all the knee jerk people on social media saying, why are we remaking everything? You know, not the dumbasses that don't understand it's an adaptation of a novel.
Right.
And I've said for a long time that an unfaithful adaptation of a novel does a huge favor to a future filmmaker who can go back and be like, hey, there's a bunch of stuff left on the bone there. Right, you got a lot of maybe you got a stew going.
Yeah, I mean it's just the same thing for Frankenstein for me.
Yeah,
I thought this was a way better adaptation of the book than anything we've had before.
Even though it was quite different in some areas.
Yeah, it was way and also way different than anything other film Frankenstein we've had.
Yeah,
I mean besides the miniseries one that was pretty faithful too,
but boring is not.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No,
and so the gripe about this as a remake of Frankenstein is nonsense.
Right. Or I'm
and
talking
that's
about
why I make my point all the time about remakes versus readaptations.
Right. And that's what, you know, I found an interview with Edgar Wright talking about how, you know, this really isn't a remake of the Arnold movie. It's a fresh adaptation of the book.
Yeah. Really the first one.
Yes, the first real adaptation of the book.
Yeah. Right?
Because the previous movie took some character names, right? And the existence of a game called The Running Man.
Right.
And that was basically it. And so, yeah, like it did Edgar Wright a favor in saying there's a ton of stuff here you can still adapt. And I don't think anybody could seriously watch this movie and go, wow, that's a ripoff of The Running Man.
But
if they don't know the book, then maybe.
Exactly. And that's the problem I have with people not understanding how books differ from movies and saying, I've watched The Lord of the Rings. I've watched this, that, and the other. And to say, yes, you have, and you might have enjoyed them, but the book can be significantly different.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my opinion, usually better, not all the time. That's a personal preference, but think about an actual adaptation of Jumper.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and now we've seen an actual adaptation of The Running Man. And maybe now we should try and talk about a couple of statistics. 65% critic rating at Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
Only 65%. And at least as of today, $31 million at the box office versus $111 million of budget didn't come anywhere near to recouping.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all went and saw Predator Badlands, right? And it's crushing at the box office, right? And yeah, this one's just, it's not doing particularly well. And I don't know if it's, 65% fresh isn't terrible, right?
Yeah.
And to me, I look at that and I'm like, that's probably fair. Just based on... I found the movie a little boring. Like I expected it to be more. There are so many other Edgar Wright movies. There is not a moment for you to get bored. Not that they're balls to the wall, but that it, like the way he kind of pulls you into the situation. Baby Driver is a great example of that, right? There are moments that slow down a little bit, but it keeps you engaged. And this movie didn't really keep me engaged, so it was weird. I was bummed the whole time. I was like, I really want to like this movie. Yeah, I mean, you know, I go in trying to like things. I don't want to be the contrarian.
Right.
I don't want to be the person with hot takes who's like, oh, that Predator movie would have been good if it got rid of all the feminist stuff. I'm like, the existence of women, is that feminist stuff? And by the way, they're synths. They're not even women. So the only female character in the movie is actually the big monster. So, but I don't want to be that guy, right? I'm not the rage bait guy on the podcast. None of us are, really.
No. Well, me. Okay.
Okay. So let me talk about stuff I really liked in the movie, right? I like the fact that there was no opening crawl. No words, no narration, right? It just expects you to pick up world bad, right? Mm-hmm. There's haves and have-nots. And it's in, never in sharper relief than when he goes to the network, right? And he crosses over into that part of town. And there's a literal wall, crazy. Right?
Yeah. And that was super. The juxtaposition there was fantastic.
Yeah, and all of a sudden he's going from, you know, old Detroit from RoboCop into... Right. The Ginza district in Tokyo, you know, I mean, basically. And so I really liked that. That's shorthand for, you know, it tells you everything you need to know just in that transition, right? And you see everybody looking at him like, that dude doesn't belong here, which of course is a thing that happens. You know, people, police roll up and go, hey, you don't belong in this neighborhood. Like, so?
Right.
I can still walk through here without you being harassed by cops.
Or you can be, you know, dark complected and be pulled over by ICE under gunpoint and then find out, oh, you know, you're a third generation U.S. citizen and
or Native American.
Right.
Or Native American. Yeah.
I liked Coleman Domingo. So this is a note of re-canonizing something, because in the book, I can't remember if it's Killian or because in the book it has a split between the kind of head of the network and the host of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
And I can't remember which one of them was a black guy in the book, but here we have, we have a split where we have a white guy and a black guy. And so, you know, I would never replace Richard Dutson. I thought it was inspired casting. Yeah. But you know, you didn't hear anybody. There was probably somebody who was like, hey, that's whitewashing. They're whitewashing the book. It's just, there was no internet in 1987. So nobody heard them.
Yeah.
But, I really like Coleman Domingo. He's very, very charming. I thought maybe he was a little underused. Just because, here's the thing I want to talk about.
Really?
About, so the 87 movie, right?
Okay.
It, let's talk about the book.
The book.
The way the Running Man show works, I have no idea, right? You never really see the show in the movie, or in the book, because it's a book. There's nothing visual, right? But you know that the contestants have to record a video, which is presumably going to be played during the show. Right, during the broadcast.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound very interesting.
During some sort of recap or something.
Yeah. I remember reading the book thinking, this show would suck because it would completely depend on the stuff that was sent into them with 70s technology, right? Mm-hmm. Where now in the Arnold one, they're like, well, we'll just make it so it's a zone. It's covered with cameras, right? There are areas, there are blind spots, but it's covered with cameras. We can make this exciting, right? We can cut back to the studio and have him giving away the home game and then say, hey, we go live to the arena where, you know, Buzzsaw has entered. But with modern technology, and that's what I appreciate about the fact that this is an updated adaptation for modern times and projecting, you know, 15 minutes in the future.
Right.
With drones and drone coverage and the freebie drones, right? It makes it so that it's like the checking in every day element to it, I thought was less important because you have more of that camera coverage already.
Right, but they didn't know where he was. And so the only way they'd get a feel for him, what he's doing,
is that footage.
And so aside from the investigation going on by the hunters, there's not a lot of interesting things going on. And so you need the, in the book, it was the postmark of where it was sent from to give them a hint.
Yeah.
In this case, they know which flying mailbox.
Which drone it came from,
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think keeping that mechanic in there and keeping that faithful to the book made sense. I'm not totally sure it was necessary, but it gives them something that they have to do, right? They have to expose themselves in order to deliver those.
Right.
Right.
But it was always part of the story that the community was encouraged to turn you in.
Yes.
Yep. And so, and they did a great job of just painting these people as horrible, because nobody, very few people know who they are. And so on national TV, or international TV, they say, oh, this person is horrible, it's licentious, and sleeps around, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of what's happening right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there are people that get on TV from our government, and they say things like, oh, these are, they're trying to cause sedition, and they should be hanged and killed. And within hours, the people who make the statement of, this is what the law is like, and you should follow the law, they're getting death threats.
Yeah.
And the power of, you know, the power of the podium, so to say, right, for that religion is just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so here, you know, this movie, to its credit, like, really takes on the world of AI slop we're in, right? Because they can make anything look like anything. Yep. And I I had kind of forgotten. Ethan and I rewatched the 87 movie the other day, and they do the whole mapping onto with the fight with Captain Freedom.
Yes.
Right. And so that was like a nice precursor as well. But here it's even more so. They can make stuff up whole cloth.
Yep.
And completely change what happened, right? They don't just have to stage the scene and then come in later and say, that's the story. They can totally alter it.
That's right. They can show you your wife and daughter getting killed. And
Yeah. So I did think that was cool because like it comprehends where we're at in terms of society.
Yeah.
What did you think of the other performances? So there's Glenn Powell, Coleman Domingo, Josh Brolin are kind of the main three, right?
Oh, I mean, Josh Brolin does, smarmy and you know, deceitful lying just really, really well.
Oh, yeah. And his veneers really show his teeth.
He reminds me of Tom Brady.
Yes. 100%.
Yes. I think my favorite character was the vlogger.
Oh, yeah.
When he began to say, don't you understand? They do the same thing every time. They've got, incompetent right. doofus. They've got the second guy and they've got the angry mm-hmm. person. And it's like, oh, well, now we know where, Glenn Powell's coming from.
The priest or the preacher or something like that?
Oh, the apostle,
I think. The apostle.
Right? Yeah,
the apostle was interesting, and I liked talking about like the tropes of the game. Right, there's the doofus who's gonna chat up somebody at the store, right, and be like, yeah, maybe I got one of those faces that looks kind of famous, right? Maybe you've seen me someplace, and like gets killed immediately.
Yeah,
and then the burn it all down, party person, who was played by Katie O'Brien. Yeah, she played Laughlin, right?
Laughlin.
I like that kind of thing where they throw in a character name in common. Although I think it was Laughlin in the book. Was it Laughlin and Weiss in the book? I can't remember.
I don't remember. So I made the mistake of not recently rereading the book, so it's not all fresh in my head. I did skim the Wikipedia entry pretty quickly. And I'm like, wow, this is there, this is there, this is there, this is there, that's there, this is there. It's done a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Even the part about them having a half-blind, hiding as a half-blind priest in a YMCA and...
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the trunk ride.
Yeah, that was
because it was told completely from inside the trunk. You don't get to see the chase. You don't get to see the action. It's the person in the trunk, and you wonder what it's like, and they get the crap beat out of them being back there.
Yeah, that was good, and that was quite an Edgar Wright kind of thing to do. I think
that was
Glenn Powell there a few times. Like, what did you think of making Ben Richards like the most angry person in the world? Because that was an adaptational choice, right? To just have him be super angry.
Yeah.
Where in the book, he wasn't really like that. He was definitely bitter. But to me, he felt like he was channeling like One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest, Jack Nicholson. Like young Jack Nicholson was what I saw him evoking.
Wow. Almost to the point of craziness, insanity.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. And when you think of the, right, I'm still here, you shit eaters. Right? Like I wanted more of that. From his performance. And the problem is, right, it's still a short medium, right, movies are. So it's kind of hard to portray him posing as the priest for a month, right?
Right.
And so that was part of what I didn't love was it seemed like he made pretty bad decisions right away and kept getting caught right away, right?
You all can just watch my butt sleep.
Yep. I like the fact that it shows some of the other games, right? Where it showed like the treadmill for dollars,
yes,
kind of thing. It was a little bit different. They moved it off being so fat phobic, or no, maybe they didn't.
No, they didn't.
They was overweight.
Yeah,
right. In the book, it was like people with a heart condition.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So no, it stayed fat phobic. So.
Yeah, I did like how they showed all the couple other games too. That was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Arnold dollars.
Yeah.
Lee Pace as McCone, the lead hunter,
mm-hmm.
just great.
Yeah, I enjoyed him as well. And there were a few one-liners here and there and funny scenes like, why are we upstairs? We were downstairs. Now we're back upstairs. Like, well, did we come upstairs just so you could slide down a pole?
Yeah, we did.
So a lot of people that I've seen complain about the movie complain that it really slows down once he's in the car. And so this is where I want to talk to you about, of course, him getting in the car, carjacking the woman, right?
Amelia, yeah.
Is straight out of the book.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's interesting to me that people are like, the movie really went downhill from there, where they adapted something straight out of the book, and everybody's like, but that part sucked.
No, but he went to YMCA. That's right out of the book. He mm-hmm. hid as a priest. That's right mm-hmm. out of the book. Yep. He was sent to Maine. That's right out of the book. I mean, it's
right.
Every single beat and tone seems to be there, and the character names are the same. And
Mm-hmm. Right, but that isn't evidently enough for it to be a universally loved movie.
So is the main complaint about the last 25 minutes where he's in the car?
As far as I can tell. And, you know, if I'm honest, so let's talk. Everybody, we're going to have to spoil the ending of this movie. So if you're going to see it, see it. because at the end of the book, and by now, if you haven't read the book since we covered this in 2021, you haven't really been keeping up with us, and it's on you. So at the end of the book, he's been shot in the abdomen, right? Like, he's dying. Right.
He's got shot, yeah.
He knows that his family has been killed because neighbors found out that she was starting to get money, and that went bad for her.
Right. He was told that she got killed.
Yeah.
And I think that jives exactly with what goes on in the movie, too.
Yeah. I mean, the book doesn't really leave you...
I think the book's circumstances of her death made it much more plausible, though, than the movie's circumstances.
Yeah, it's less complicated. It's more benign human evil, right? Where all of a sudden somebody in your neighborhood, which is a bad neighborhood...
Because I can see that happening.
...is doing well, so let's go take her stuff.
Especially in that world.
Yeah, yeah. The book... I'm sure there is room to doubt it, right? Sure. But I don't remember it presenting it as something you could doubt. Where the movie definitely leans into AI slop and that kind of stuff. Like, what can you believe? If you can't believe your eyes, what can you believe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so then when he's presented with that, because he's been shot and he thinks his family is dead, he just decides, you know what? I'm taking out a building with this plane, right?
Right.
Post 9/11, you're probably not doing that in a movie.
No.
And so that's
it's a Central Network building where Killian and Bobby are.
Yeah.
What long-term effect does it have? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. In today's culture, we would not show that in a just casual movie anymore.
Yeah.
I remember thinking the same thing as we were watching the movie. I'm like, are they actually going to do this? I haven't seen this in a movie since before.
Yeah. And the other thing is, right, we know from kind of anything you've heard about behind 9/11, right, mm-hmm. where behind the scenes, where it's like Flight 93 probably never makes it to its destination, even if the passengers don't revolt. It probably gets shot down by fighter jets. Right. Because by then we would have a response. Well, in the future, now, you know, they all know where this plane is. It probably gets taken out by a missile as well. Yeah. And that plot point is in the movie as well. They use that as the way they present it as that this is what happened. Right. Because mm-hmm. once you're dead off screen and it's in the 87 movie as well, does this where Captain Freedom kills both Amber and Ben.
Right.
And so now they can never let them out of there alive because they're controlling the narrative. So yeah, I struggle with what is actually real. What movie is what story is the movie telling?
Is that why you doubt the ending?
Yes. I wonder, like if I asked Edgar Wright, he'd be like, oh yeah, no, that was the ending of the movie didn't actually happen. I don't think that, but I think it's possible. Like he's presenting it like the end of Clue, you know, or it might have gone this way, you know, but here's what really happened, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think if they had gone that route, then when the apostle shows the ejected piece of the escape pod, in essence,
right.
They would have just left it there and left it in doubt. But to actually show Kathy and her mom at the store and Ben Richards across the street.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of with Colin on this one.
Yeah. And I think... Ultimately, I think you're right. But I think what I'm saying is I would have preferred it to be left ambiguous.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it would have been a stronger ending, but not as uplifting. It would have been a downer ending with the possibility of, well, we don't really know what happened, and just let the apostle leave it with us to decide.
Yeah.
Right? So for us to do our own research.
So Ben, at that point, would then have to live with the tarnish of his reputation that came from being on the network show, because they said, you know, how awful of a person that he was. And so that's why he's walking around with a mask.
Yeah.
There's the whole montage of taking down the network society and changing things. Now Ben is the initiator.
Right.
And it's kind of cool that Amelia seems to buy into the end because he gives her all the pamphlets to take and distribute because he's not going to make it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I will say that the scene aboard the plane was really well shot and performed. I thought it was good. So
the car scene. Mm-hmm. Do we have to have the car scene to begin to show Amelia that Ben is right? You know, it's not showtime yet. They're going to let us through.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of interesting, Right. With the and the whole thing, I liked mm-hmm. that bit of it where okay, the apostle kind of pulled the veil back about if you're doing well and you're getting good ratings,
right?
They're not going to try and kill you as quickly, right? Yeah. They want to milk it for all it's worth.
Yep.
Make it look like you're about to win and then take you out.
Yeah. Well, or in this case, you know, think they've got a better replacement. And so, you know, we're going to cancel the original Hunters. You can be Hunter 6.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's very much the, soon I will have a new apprentice, one far younger, powerful.
Yes. Yes. But it said, no loyalty, no commitment, no anything.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is very par for the course for that kind of late-stage capitalism portrayal.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it has the stuff from the book about the respiratory diseases and that kind of stuff. It didn't hit it as hard as the book did, right? Where he was repeatedly saying this stuff. The movie leaned more into the what can you believe from the media, because they changed everything that he said, right?
Yeah.
Where he would go on there and give this impassioned speech, and then they'd just change it so that he's like, I've been killing people. I'll kill more.
And I'll smile when I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even the part about the mother turning them in, that's straight out of the book.
Yeah. The other thing, so one of the things that I wrote down in the bad was like, Ben seems to have amazing plot armor, but it totally fits in with the, well, how hard are they trying to kill you?
Right.
They're shooting at you for ratings.
No, they're shooting at him for real.
Towards the end.
What I'm saying is in several parts of the movie, he's running down a hallway and they don't hit him. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
And so that's stormtrooper aiming,
right?
Which is the thing, you know, right? But it also kind of fits in with the narrative idea, where hey, this guy's good for ratings. We'll shoot to motivate him.
Yeah, they're just shooting around to keep him running, right?
Yeah,
you don't want to kill him from far away. You want it up close, mm-hmm. the camera.
Come on, you want to put the knife in, and you want to watch the life die in my eyes.
You want to see what happens when you turn it. Let's party. Commando, not adapted, dang it.
Yes.
That's a science fiction movie.
So aside from the pacing of the car, what else didn't... You wanted some more rightisms, like laying something out initially and then having it pay off later.
No. I mean, I was just saying Hot Fuzz does that really well. I didn't want it to be a comedy, necessarily. There was just... I don't know. The pacing didn't seem ideal to me, and I found myself getting a little bored and restless. Mm.
Well, for someone who's hiding all the time, that's kind of what happens, though.
Yeah, I just...
You get this oscillation of, he's hiding, he's trying not to be observed, there's always tension, mm-hmm. and then, boom, something big happens, and he has to go find a new place to hide and get away and not get killed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I just wanted some more kineticism to that, right? Where maybe the times where he's hiding, that's when you show us what the burnout lady's doing, who's sleeping around in Las Vegas, right? And gambling.
Yeah, but she's not the
main character.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know, but maybe make it... I don't know. I can't put my finger on what exactly I wanted, other than I just found myself a little bored. So, but it's okay. I remember, you know, I went to see Interstellar and was disappointed, and you guys both liked it a lot. So
true.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah.
I think another thing Colin and I liked about this movie was the music.
Yeah, the music was good.
The music was great.
Yes. I really did like the Michael Cera scene in the house. With the electrified floor and everything, just all the, it was like Home Alone for adults, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was another thing where, like, because I'd seen several of the trailers, I'd seen kind of all the main beats.
Maybe you're just watching too many trailers, man.
I think I just saw the trailer too many times. And that's why lots of times I show up, you know, 25 minutes after the movie time, because I don't want to get spoiled by movie trailers. Because I would support amendment to the Constitution that movie trailers cannot be more than 30 seconds long.
Yep. I would agree.
Because
with that.
We don't need more than that. If you need more than that, then nobody's coming to your movie.
It makes me wonder about the evolution of trailers. Why? Because that used to be exactly the way it was. Mm-hmm. You got a taste of the movie.
Yeah.
You did not get a plot summary.
Yeah. Free Willy was the first one where it's like, hey, let's show the whole movie in the trailer. And then people will come and they'll watch the whole movie. Like,
it's the movies got longer, so the trailers got longer.
Yeah. Well, no, I think it's a thing of the... Movies are a big business, right? And movie theaters are kind of dying. And so they need to try and get as many butts in the seats as they can. And they have no confidence in the audience, in us being able to look at a description of a movie and deciding we want to see it. And so they feel like, well, we really got to show all the good parts to get people to come.
But if you've seen all the good parts, why go see the movie?
Exactly.
Right.
Watch it at home, because there's no value to the movie. that
yeah. Yeah. Like, you do it for the $7.95 popcorn or whatever it is, $11.25 now.
Yeah. Yeah, if you buy a soda and a box of candy, it's $12.
Yeah.
I was just reading an article in the New York Times about this exact topic. They're trying to analyze the drop in movie attendance and also by kind of by genre. Because apparently, horror films are seeing a spike.
Yeah.
But comedy and drama are tanking. Action's about the same. And one of the things that the reporter was saying that they got from people in Hollywood is that Hollywood was blaming the audience for being like just ignorant or stupid or whatever. But essentially blaming the audience. I'm like, how do you blame your customers for not buying your product?
The horror You're things are really unique these days. Like think about Weapons.
Right.
Yeah.
Massively unique and interesting and entertaining. A lot of the action movie is just, we're doing this again. And the comedy is either gross or.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I always like going for action movies because I feel like action movies take advantage of the theater.
Yes.
You're getting the sound, you're getting the seats, butt kicker seats, and the big screen. Like it all makes advantage of it. So, you know, seeing something like that in theaters is great until you have too many Avengers movies. But
yeah. I mean, I think that's part of it, right? Action movies are just like you just look down the list. I think I gave this as a quiz for you and Phil based on something that we did at Worldcon. Talking about the groupings of the top 10 grossing films for I can't remember if it was this year or last year, but like only two of them were original works. All the other ones were like new installments in a franchise or remakes, you know, more or less. And, you know, here, this one is, it falls into the remake bucket, but the readaptation side.
There you go. There you go.
There was a previous movie called The Running Man. There is now another one. It's the same as with The Thing and The Thing, right? The Thing from Another World and The Thing, right?
Yeah.
I think audiences are responding to the fact that there's a lot of generic crap that they're putting out there and trying to make it successful. They don't trust us to go to anything that we're not already familiar with.
Right.
Oh, and that's why they keep doing series and sequels. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't trust the audience. They think it's the audience's fault.
Yeah.
And so like, how does that help anything?
And so one of my worries about this movie is that even though I didn't love it, I applaud the fact that this was not really a remake of The Running Man, right? This was a unique take on an adaptation of the book. Mm-hmm. But
with that budget and that box office, will they ever do something like this again?
True. Mm-hmm. Probably not.
That's a shame.
I'm sure they will. We'll get. Well, I mean, right now there's the new TV adaptation of Harry Potter, right? But of course, all those movies killed. So if the series is well received, they'll keep doing that, right?
So I wonder, because if you think about the Star Wars trilogy, and then you think about the prequel trilogy, and then you think about the sequel trilogy, and you contrast that to what's going on with the Marvel movies, where they crank out three movies every year, I think that gap in time actually builds the tension and the expectation and maybe a little forgiveness for things that are, you know, completely different from the way the original sets were.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter how many years you wait. I'm not going to go see the next Jurassic World movie. Right. I saw the first one and that was enough. Yeah. and I don't need to see any more of those.
But, which isn't know. Even that. Why are we talking about this? It's not that.
And we haven't been talking about The Running Man in a while.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're just trying to figure out like why didn't this do well? And I think it's there because Hollywood has been so committed to not doing anything original and so long that people see something like this come along and they just expect it's going to be another generic remake. You know, it's going to hit all exactly the same beats. And this one doesn't hit hardly any of the same beats.
So the trailer design should not have made it look like an Arnold Schwarzenegger remake.
Yeah.
But because everyone knows the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie versus the original book, you can't help but think that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it probably did hurt it. I think there were a lot of people who didn't see it just because they figured it was going to be like the Total Recall remake.
So in the past, we've talked about when a movie sucks so badly, what would we have done to change it? And I want to propose that we talk about something a little bit different this time.
Okay.
Knowing what we know today, that this movie is a box office failure, or that somebody typed the wrong number into Wikipedia, one or the other, how would you market this to try and get people to come to it?
Yeah, I think you would want to front the fact that it's based on a Bachman book.
I think you have to retitle it completely.
But the game.
I think you have to retitle it completely.
What would you retitle it?
I don't know.
Running Man 2, Electric Boogaloo?
I don't know. I mean, they have the rights to it. You can call it anything you want. You call it the book in an effort to try and connect with the people who read the book and are familiar with it. And then you do whatever you want with it. What do you do when you do not want to be connected to the adaptation you made in 1987 and tell the original story?
Yeah.
And the only thing I can think of is you have to retitle it.
You have to retitle it, yeah.
Yeah, but then you end up with the Edge of Tomorrow problem, right? Where, like...
Right.
I don't know if All You Need Is Kill would have been a title that would have drawn people in either, but they seem to latch on pretty quickly to the live, die, repeat thing, right?
Yeah.
Where, like, maybe if they had started with that title, people would have gone, interesting, you know? Yeah, I'm not sure how you would retitle this one since, like, the book is literally called that. The game in the book is called that.
The Running Human.
Yes. No,
what if you just
running people.
It. I was just gonna say. you put it in with Taraji P. Henson and call it the running diva or something. But
what? Yeah.
Like they did with the what men want, where they gender flipped what women want.
Right.
Like men are not complicated. we are not an enigma.
What men want. Done.
Yep.
You get Schwarzenegger to appear in the trailer and you explain, no, it doesn't work either.
You could, you know, I want you to come to see the new adaptation of The Running Man. It's not a remake of my movie. My movie is still great.
Right.
It's a readaptation of the book.
Yeah.
I mean, Schwarzenegger was in the movie. I think
his
he would
depiction
be,
was in the movie.
He evidently enjoyed the movie and, yeah, the depiction was that at some point in the past, he had been president, right?
Right.
But
just
think
like
he would,
Demolition Man.
Yeah. And, you know, Schwarzenegger was a longtime supporter of the Republican Party, which has turned into a post-apocalyptic hellscape in real life and in the movie. So
I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it can't be done.
Yeah,
maybe
I'm
it should
sure.
be done within memory's time of the original movie.
Yeah, but I think you're right, though, Colin, that like the fact that they went back and hewed as close to the book as they did, and then it didn't hit, you know, that it didn't make the box office that people expected, is going to make it so like, well, why should we dig out any of those books? Let's just remake, you know, something else.
Or adapt. We never remake a previous adaptation to try and do it better, unless it's Frankenstein or Wuthering Heights or...
Something super well-trod, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And a new Christmas Carol.
Yeah, given there's two of those coming out in the next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
I wonder if Ink to Film will cover this. I'd love to have their take on it.
Yeah, I can't remember if they did the original or not. I'd have to go back and look in their catalog. Because, yeah, like, I mean, we've talked about it in the past, right? Doing a faithful adaptation doesn't guarantee a good movie. And it certainly doesn't, you know, mean it's going to be a successful movie.
Even though it's a good movie.
Right.
It's not a bad movie. It, you know, Seth could have been better because what you all can see is him shaking his head right now.
Well, this is what I've been struggling with is talking to Ethan about how we both prefer the Arnold movie. And I'm much more apt to say, I mean, the Arnold movie isn't a better movie. It's just one that, you know, I'll watch again a bunch of times, but I don't see myself rewatching this one.
Wow.
So it's just more pure entertainment than anything. So
yeah, I mean, the Arnold movie from 87 is definitely enjoyable, definitely entertaining.
Yeah.
I watched it with Tim because he wanted to watch it because he had never seen it before. And he said, why'd they call it The Running Man? They don't run.
They do a few times.
There's some light running. There's some light jogging. I mean, Arnold does when he's running to get away from the prison.
Yeah.
And when he's trying to get on the tarmac, but that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going from arena to arena. It's all, you know, filmed and controlled. And
yeah. I definitely wouldn't say it's a bad movie. It's just not a movie. I mean, kind of like I wouldn't say that Interstellar is a bad movie. It's just not. It's a movie that I bounced off of. And I don't know why. So I guess the folks, the listeners will have to say, you know, did you enjoy this movie?
Yeah.
And where would you rank it in terms of the book and the other movie?
Should we do our rankings then and kind of wrap it up?
I think so. Yeah. Unless there's final thoughts. James, do you have final thoughts?
Nope.
Nope. Didn't have any initial thoughts. Didn't have any final thoughts. Perfect.
I liked the movie. I thought it was great.
Okay. Well, and this is the thing, right? Like, I'm happy to be talked into liking something more. So if there's something you think I missed, then let me know. What did audiences miss? You think we're right?
What did audiences miss? What do you mean?
You know, why aren't more people going to it?
Audience scores were higher than the critic scores on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm.
I do not claim to be made of the people, just for the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the movie, though, because I like I said, I like the music. I like the way the movie was shot. the effects, the kind of like that retro theme to it, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Even though it was told, you know, in the future, literally in the future, with floating camera balls and right. flying ships and airplanes that have metal sensors built right into them.
Yep. The DNA sensors and the lights.
It kind of had this 70s backbeat funk.
It did.
The soundtrack and it rocked.
The soundtrack was
really
cool.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it hit all the same spots for me that the book did with the critique of society, and it worked well.
Yeah.
And I thought this movie in particular was released in a timely manner too.
Mm-hmm.
So it hit all the beats for me. So that's why I like it. I didn't have any expectations going into it. I think similar to what you do with Edgar Wright. I didn't realize Edgar Wright did all this stuff until I just looked at IMDb. Okay. Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't, even if it's the same director from movie to movie, I wouldn't expect him to do the same thing from movie to movie.
No, either. I mean, Baby Driver is a very different movie than any of the Cornetto trilogy, right?
Right.
And they're all very different than Scott Pilgrim, which we got to do our graphic novel stuff next year.
Okay.
Because there's too many good things to cover.
But not in March and not in December.
Okay. Sounds good. What's in March?
Hail Mary.
Project Hail Mary.
March 26th.
Okay.
You'll be there.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
you want to rank them? How would you rank them?
I'd do this movie over the last movie.
Okay.
And the book? Where'd that fall in then?
Yeah, I don't really remember. I didn't reread it.
Okay. Well, we can go movie and movie.
Yeah.
I think I would go new movie, book, old movie. The 87 movie is a great comedy, action comedy with science fiction in it. It's really enjoyable. It's really fun. It will be in the zeitgeist forever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, The book tells a story about things that could happen and that are happening today, and the movie shows that really, really, really well. Again, like it's weird. Back to back months, we've had incredible canonical adaptations that were also good movies.
Mm. Okay,
yeah, I probably have to agree with Colin there. But think about it, because I'm guessing in the previous episode I probably did rank the story over the book, or I mean the
book over the movie.
Book over the movie. So in this case, it would probably be the new movie, book, and then the old movie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll be the contrarian.
Sure.
Because I think there's a lot that I liked about the movie, but somehow like the sum was less than its parts for me. And so I think I do prefer the book over the original movie, even though the original movie, like you said, it's fantastically entertaining. So I'd go book, 87 movie, new movie.
Wow.
Anyhow.
You can be wrong. It's okay.
I can be wrong. Yeah.
So next year, let's do something. Next year in November, let's do something special, because we've been doing a lot of episodes. I think we should rewatch this movie in a year after you've had time to sit and percolate about it and see if it's different in a year. Because you watched Interstellar a second time and you came out of it with different opinions.
I appreciated it more on the second time. I appreciate especially the score the second time. Anyhow, let's we'll table that as a that's funny. The use of the word table in different contexts means either we're going to stop talking about this or we're going to present it as a topic to talk about. But
what's on the table?
I'll file it.
Table that.
Yeah. Yes. Circular file. Okay. So I think I would like to stick with Stephen King so we don't have to read anything very long for next month. Because we had another Stephen King adaptation. This is three Stephen King adaptations in 1 year because The Life of Chuck came out this summer.
We didn't do that though. How come we didn't do that one?
We were doing something else. Yeah. We were doing robots.
Yeah, we were doing robots. So we were saving it for
robots
for,
are awesome.
Yeah. So if we want to finish out the year with King, and I think it's a decent Christmas movie. Not that it's Christmassy in any way, but it's a decent movie to watch around Christmas.
Well, and in January we have our choice of things. I've heard that the Planet Zoom players are going to be the first people to do the new MIT translation of Rossum's Universal Robots.
Mm.
So we could do that. And then there's also a new batch of Percy Jackson coming out. So
yeah, there's a new Percy Jackson. I don't really want to do multiple episodes on that. I wouldn't mind doing... at some point, there's so many adaptations that we just every now and then need to do a checking in on adaptations thing where we talk about, hey, have you watched, you know, whatever the what was that one called on Apple TV?
Foundation.
The Big Door Prize or something. It was where a machine shows up at the local convenience store. If you go in there, it tells you what your kind of the peak of your life will be. It tells you that, you know, you're going to be a good
like
whistler.
Fortune telling
you know.
By it or something?
Yeah, something like that. But it's adapted.
Wow.
And
how did I miss that?
There's Foundation. There's Wheel of Time. There's Percy Jackson. There's
Murderbot.
There's all kinds of stuff happening all the time, and you know, we can't cover all of it, but it might be fun to just be like, we've all been watching some stuff in adaptation that maybe we've read the book or haven't, and we could talk about, you know, just check in on some of those things.
So we could do like a grab bag.
We tried doing that when I was in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
A long time ago. And the connection was so bad at my hotel that it didn't really work.
Because we also never talked about Handmaid's Tale.
Right.
Or what was the Philip K. Dick?
Oh, Electric Man Dreams.
High Castle. Yeah.
Oh, Man in High Castle.
Man in High Castle, yeah.
There was Electric Dreams, which was an anthology show.
Yeah. There's Slow Horses. That's not quite science fiction, but it's spy.
Love, Death, and Robots, right? There's lots of those that are adapted, too. So there's plenty of material to mine there. I wouldn't mind trying to switch over more to doing some graphic novel stuff.
We can throw graphic novels in the mix. Yeah. I mean, one of the decisions that was made early on was initially you did not want to cover short adaptations because it's only 30 minutes. And so what can you do with that?
Yeah. I mean, we did the whole thing of Twilight Zone stuff.
We did a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Especially if it was part of doing something else, like we did with, Adam Link.
Yeah.
But if we want to do, you know, little short extra episodes, meet after and talk for an hour, as long as you don't mind editing.
Yeah, that is the part. Well, we just do it live. Just put it on YouTube.
Yes, unedited.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody wants that. Right. So yeah, and we talked about graphic novels and how, you know, it's adapting a visual medium to a different visual medium.
Yeah.
And you know what's there are different hurdles there, right? How close do you hew to the because the nice thing about books is the way a character looks on a page is the words describing them. The way they look in a movie is a picture. Mm-hmm. And to me, I don't need any correspondence between the two. A lot of people are just hugely upset that, you know, character, you know, well, that character was supposed to have blonde hair instead of black hair. And I'm like, well, why do we care about this? They made Annabeth in the second Percy Jackson movie, who played by...
she was like a redhead or something, right?
No. She had dark hair in the first movie.
Yes.
Alexander Daddario,
yes.
Right? Like this is a Mediterranean sounding name, right? And they made her more of a blonde in the second movie. and then, you know, Annabeth in the series obviously isn't blonde.
No.
So, yeah.
And, you know, if the author buys into it, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
But if he says this is an important thing that you should not change for some reason, then I'm not so much. Even if he's lost his adaptational control and rights.
Yeah. So anyhow, let's go ahead and do Life of Chuck if you guys don't object. It's a short story.
As long as we can get it on, you know, 3 week notice.
I have devices.
You have devices.
Yep. Okay. I bought a collection of short stories.
We can talk about this offline.
Yep. Yep. Actually, no, I can tell you right now.
So yeah, so we can look at it, see if Libby has it.
So anybody else wants to try and find it, the collection that it's in, Life of Chuck is in a Stephen King collection called If It Bleeds. I can't remember. We've been rambling a long time, so I'm not sure how much of it ends up in the podcast. But
blooper reel.
Yeah.
Ramble reel.
Let us know about our projected schedule going forward. Yeah.
Go watch the movie. Tell us what you think about it on social media, on Facebook. I've had some wonderful conversations with Science Fiction 101 people. Mm-hmm. And I would love to do that more with Take Me to Your Reader, because I know that other people read and watch the same things we do. And then... if you liked the movie or didn't like the movie, tell us about that. And if you have an explanation for why you think it isn't doing well in the box office, bring that out too.
Excellent. Shout out to Dr. Sue. She almost always comments on our stuff, even if she doesn't watch the movie.
Yes.
Nice. So, thank you.
And she comments on Science Fiction 101 as well.
Sue was a rockin' saxophone player. So.
Nice. Well, then until next time, may the road rise up to meet you and may the book always fall open to where you left off. Bye, everybody.
Ciao.
In this case, it is... The 2025.
Gareth Edwards.
No.
Walking Man?
Nope.
Oh. Crawling Man.
What the hell is the director's name?
Gareth Edwards.
No, it is not.
Glenn Edward, no? Edgar Wright.
Yes, there we go.